Hello and welcome to Capital Notes, our weekly look at California politics, the ins, the outs, the good, the bad. You just have to play with things in the studio, don't you? Don't you?
You talking to me?
Who else am I talking to? There's nobody else in here. I'm John Myers from KQED Public Radio, the guy over there playing with
fire.
Some kind of little windscreen that keeps you from spitting into our microphones, is Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly, and we're back talking about politics. There's a light burned out in our studio, which is kind of annoying me. You didn't need to know that, you podcast listeners. But we're here on a Monday, on August 18th. We normally have these at the end of the week, but we didn't do one last week. Sorry to throw all of you podcast listeners. I'm going to stop saying seven, by the way, because apparently they're like 11.
Yeah. At least.
Yeah, we might have actually almost doubled our podcast audience. But we didn't do one at the end of last week because, well, for lots of reasons, but
we wanted to wait for this vote that we were expecting. And now we have more to comment on.
Now we have something actually to talk about rather than just our normal chatter. So, yes, if you have not been following things breathlessly, the Assembly met on Sunday in a rare Sunday session. I think it was, the first time in 5 years?
Right.
And to consider a budget proposal, but it was a budget proposal only crafted by Democrats. And Assembly Democrats said they thought it what represented a compromise between where they are on budget issues and the governor, but the governor never endorsed the plan.
Right.
And predictably, Republicans said no, and it failed to get a two-thirds majority, supermajority in the Assembly. And we're back to impasse.
At least to square one. It wasn't just Republicans who said no, but I think we'll talk about that a little bit later in the podcast.
That'll be round two of the budget discussion.
But clearly this doesn't seem to have brought us anywhere closer to a resolution. This is sort of the partisan budget drill that you usually see in early to mid-July, not mid-August. And, you know, this is something that Assembly Republican leader Mike Feliens from Fresno has been clamoring for a long time. Whether he just wanted to get Democrats on the record voting for what Republicans clearly feel is a bad budget. There may have been political motivations involved, but we'll see if Feliens getting his wish and the Democrats putting up votes on this budget is enough to perhaps move the logjam a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the lingo that you hear every year when a budget goes up for a vote that everybody knows is not going to get the passage, it's a drill. It's a
right.
Political drill. We're just doing this just to make a political point. But it was almost as though, yeah, the tables were turned this year. I mean, Republicans wanted this. I wonder if they got what they wanted out of voting no on this thing and it being 48 days late now or something.
Right. Well, they got 45 Democrats on record supporting this budget. And I've got to imagine that Republicans think that in this budget proposal that came up for a vote on Sunday is some political ammunition to use against would-be candidates in the future. Now, I'm hard-pressed. I mean, there are no Democratic incumbents running in tough races this year. So I'm not quite sure how this gets used or why this seemed to be so important to Feliens and the Assembly Republican leadership. But, you know, it's something – it became a mantra of sorts from Assembly Republicans for Democrats to put up the votes for this budget.
Well, and so the big parts of this budget that went up for a vote, it had a tax increase. The Assembly Democrats decided to go back for this purposes to just going back to talking about an increase in personal income taxes for the highest earners.
And corporations.
And some business taxes in there as well. They dropped a few proposals that they were talking about during the budget conference committee process, like reducing the credit for children, the dependent child care credit, and the whole thing called indexing, which I don't want to like bore you to tears on the podcast, but effectively means it was a proposal that might have meant a higher tax burden for even middle-income earners because of the way the tax code is written. They dropped that proposal. But it was by and large what the conference committee had talked about. It had a lottery borrowing proposal in it, though not quite as ambitious as the governor's.
Right.
There was nothing unusual out of this. This was a Democratic budget. This is what the Democratic principles have been for weeks.
Absolutely. And now it's codified and on the record. You know, if that
which makes you wonder why we covered it, but
well, but you know, if it because it's the only thing we've got. It's the only budget vote that we have. You know, like I said before, I mean, whether this has any significance or plays any role in actually bringing about a final deal remains to be seen. I mean, I don't know what to believe anymore. Last week, I was hearing the Senate was ready to go; that they had the votes for budget. Now it's the Assembly taking up the votes first, and in a seemingly as a sign. I mean, the reason this vote came up on Sunday was it seems to be an acknowledgement of an impasse. Mm-hmm. You know, you know, I still today the Assembly is in session as we speak. Just working through all the bills that the governor says he's going to veto until he gets a budget. You know, I don't know what's going on. The speaker met with Mike Vallance today. Karen Bass met with Mike Vallance today, but as of this afternoon, at least, no budget, no deal.
Well, here's what, and at the risk of putting too much emphasis on this, because I don't, you know, we don't know where it's going to go. But I'll tell you the one interesting thing I picked up on at the end of Sunday night's marathon session. I think it was a 4-hour debate. And it's one of those debates, and I love politics, I mean, or else I wouldn't have this job, but it was just painful because at a certain point, you'd heard everything. You know, you'd heard every Republican say, I'm not going to vote for a tax increase, it's crazy. You'd heard every Democrat say, you know, we're not going to do draconian cuts, and Republicans, where are your budget proposals? You know, you'd heard it. You'd heard it 17 times over.
There was no Dick Mountjoy or Dennis Mountjoy baby parts speech this year, though, was there?
If you don't watch Capital Politics, right, Anthony, you want to explain what you're talking about?
Dennis Mountjoy, a conservative Republican, former assemblyman from Monrovia, voted against the budget every year, and his reason was that there was abortion funding in the budget, and there was every year a ritual of the Capitol where Dennis Mountjoy would give his speech about the going black market prices for baby parts as his justification for voting against the budget.
A completely, really, one of those speeches you don't want to hear. But then after you heard it about, what, five times, 5 years in a row, you kind of just weren't paying attention to the
And you've grown to miss it, anymore. Haven't you, Joe?
Well, I have grown to miss something that might be not predictable in this. But so what I was going to say is at the end of the Sunday night debate and the floor session adjourned and the leadership met with reporters afterward. And in the conversation with Mike Vallance, the Assembly Republican leader, I heard something slightly different, which was Vallance saying, because let's back up for a moment. One of the reasons that Democrats said we were having a Sunday budget vote was because of this still fluid, somewhat nebulous deadline to get something on the November ballot, because right. The governor has said he wants a budget reform proposal on the ballot and he wants a lottery borrowing proposal on the ballot. They don't want to call it borrowing, but we've been down that road before.
It's borrowing.
And to get those on the ballot, you're running out of time. How much time you have depends on who you talk to. Local elections officials at a certain point here within the next couple of weeks are going to start getting their ballots set to send them to the printers. And I think that's really a deadline, because if you have to go back and print new ballots, well, it sucks, but it costs money.
And it's a problem.
So, but out of Vallance last night, or Sunday night, last night, Sunday night, am I supposed to be pretending this isn't Monday?
No. You said it was Monday.
To heck with it. But out of Vallance on Sunday night was a comment that said that he's essentially less worried about ballot deadlines now than getting the right budget. Which to me, and he said, you know, something to the effect of phony, you know, we don't want phony reform and, you know, we don't want the wrong kind of reform and I'd rather have no reform at all. Which to me sounded like, hey, if we don't put a reform proposal, a budget reform proposal on the November ballot, okay.
Well,
and I tell you, you know, and you and I both know this, Anthony, that if there is no deadline for a ballot, if the ballot issue is not a big deal, I mean, then all bets are off when you get a budget, because that's really the only right. That's the main incentive to get a deal done soon.
Yeah. And there's speculation today that both the Democrats and Republicans will go to their conventions in Denver and Minneapolis, respectively, and we still won't have a budget, that they're going to go off, you know, and
really. So you're hearing people might go.
I saw that reported today, mm-hmm. You know. Can't believe everything you read or hear on a podcast, but
I wouldn't trust the press.
But you know, I mean, we'll see what happens. I do know that the speaker has a very large fundraiser planned for Sunday night in Denver. So maybe if she doesn't go for the entire convention, she'll just go for the fundraiser.
That's a tremendously large PR black eye, though, is it not, with the public? Sure. That you fly off to your conventions?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Unless there's some sort of detente or breakthrough between now and then. I mean, we've got, what, 5 days now? Now that it's Monday?
Yes.
Before Democrats skip town or are scheduled to skip town.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, if you remove these deadlines, I mean, really, I mean, it's you know, I think for a while, you know, when people would talk about the record for a budget impasse, which I think we talked about last week, is what, you know, Labor Day weekend, right, 2002.
Right.
You know, people for a while would talk about that and say, oh well, but we won't get to that this year for the following reasons. I'm not so sure anymore.
No, I mean, we're not that far away. We're 2 weeks out. And there are still a lot of bills moving as well. I mean, there's a lot going on. Now, I think there is still an incentive to get to the conventions. But we've seen we saw in 2004 that the budget stalemate dragged on through the Democratic convention, and a lot of Democrats weren't able to go to where was it, Boston in 2004?
Yeah, Democrats. Exactly. Right. John Kerry.
And look what happened to him. So if I'm Barack Obama, I want a budget deal, and I want it now.
You want, right, because you want to change the karma.
That's right.
At that convention. Well, you know, sitting there trying, you know, I think sometimes, and we talked about this in the last podcast, you know, trying to be fair to those of us who say that reporters often ask the Republicans the harder questions about the budget than Democrats. I don't think I agree with that, but nonetheless, you know, yes, we often ask Republicans where their budget proposals are. But I mean, we really are at the point now of trying to figure out what is it the legislative Republicans want? Where do they think they need to be to approve a budget? And that came up at the end of last night's vote, too. And in that chat with Valines with reporters, and, you know, and I asked him specifically, do you want a budget that is all spending cuts? You have a $15 billion deficit. Do you want to solve it through spending cuts only? And no revenues at all. And he said, well, I don't think you have to do that, but I'm not going to negotiate in public. I've heard that answer before. But it starts to me, again, raise the issue that the only way you get out of it is borrowing. The,
right.
You know, the only proposal that Republicans have floated in public, you know, in some way, shape, or form, Senate Republicans, more than Assembly Republicans, have kind of said language to that effect, is this internal borrowing from transportation money,
right,
borrowing from local government money that was approved by voters because the pots of money are sitting there.
Right. And I mean, you know, it is worthwhile, I think, sort of pan back and get some perspective. Remember 2004, I think this has come up in our past podcasts, where California voters were asked at the request of the governor and Democrats, including Steve Wesley, the former
controller.
Whoa, I had a John Myers bout there. I couldn't get the word controller out of my mouth. Former controller asking California voters to approve $15 billion worth of bonds, and that the idea was that this was going to be the last time that we were going to use the state's credit card. We were going to tear up the credit card after this, and no more borrowing. Well, here we are 4 years later, and
it's a different kind of borrowing, but for the public, the perception was we're not solving budget deficits
right,
that way anymore.
Right. Those were general obligation bonds. The kind of borrowing that's being talked about now is largely borrowing from other programs that are owed various pots of money through constitutional guarantees or statutory guarantees.
And paying them back over the next couple of years or
right.
something like that. But that seems to be the only thing left. I mean, that, you know, and I think the question then becomes, will Democrats accept that?
Well, Senate Leader Don Parada has said no.
Right.
So... You know, I don't know where that leaves us. Maybe that's a question for Don Parada.
And what about the governor? Where does all of this leave the governor? I mean, there's, you know, there are again questions about what can the governor do to break the impasse? Can he do anything? Should he be doing more? Is he doing enough? You know, is it pretty much out of his hands?
Well, and this is the time of year when you really realize the political cost of Arnold Schwarzenegger's partisan independence. He clearly is not a creature of the California Republican Party, for better and for worse, apparently, because at times like this, you could use somebody who has some leverage over Republicans. And I'm hard pressed to figure out who that person is.
And is there any person who, from a perspective, I guess, from a PR perspective? There's got to be more than PR, because that sounds like I'm denigrating what I'm about to say. But right. Is there anybody who stands to lose more from not attending a convention than Arnold Schwarzenegger, given he would get a primetime speaking role at John McCain's convention in St. Paul?
No doubt. It is hard-pressed. I'm hard-pressed to figure anybody who would command such national attention who would miss out. But, you know, and the governor has said that he won't attend the convention if there is no budget. Although now he's got a bum knee, right?
So that's right.
He had, he may be on crutches. Wasn't he on crutches in 04?
No,
to the podium.
No, no, no. He was in crutches, and he injured his leg skiing in 2006.
Oh, it was the Academy Awards or the Golden Globes,
yes,
where he walked.
Yes,
right. I get all these showbiz events confused.
But no, apparently he doesn't have any crutches or anything this time. After he had knee surgery this past weekend, if you didn't see this, it was breathlessly reported all across the media, and that Lieutenant Governor Garamendi did assume the powers while the governor was under anesthesia, in case you were worried about the state.
What that disturbance in the force was.
But he had surgery to repair his meniscus. I'm trying to think about the force and what that disturbance looked like. But anyway, no, I mean, I think the governor has a lot to lose there. And, you know, the governor clearly wants to be there at the Republican convention. And they've been working on his speech for weeks. And, I mean, that's a big deal. And so you've got to think the governor has some incentive there. But, I mean, I think you raised an excellent point, which is that you can say that the governor hasn't done enough for Republicans in his party or in the legislature, but you can make the point that you made, Anthony, which is that he has positioned himself as a different kind of politician.
Right.
And when you are an independent voice, you don't necessarily have anybody to fall back on, and times are bad.
That's true, you know, but at some point, I mean, someone's got to be able to go, you know, whether it's the leaders, whether it's Dave Cogdell and Mike Vallines, I mean, someone's got to be able to figure out a way to deliver some votes. I mean, that was something that Pete Wilson was good at, was delivering Republican votes for his budgets, even the ones that weren't very popular, that involved tax increases in the early 90s. And
but do you think things were different then because term limits hadn't quite set in and the mood here was different?
I do. And you know, Pete Wilson, remember, was also somewhat of a pariah within his party when he ran, mostly because he was pro-choice. You know, and that budget hurt Wilson among Republican Party insiders as well. Times were different. But, you know, at some point, I mean, we've got to have a budget sometime, right?
You would think so.
Maybe we'll put it on the ballot, put the whole budget on the ballot.
Well, you know, let's let the voters decide everything. And an update on something else we've talked about that I was checking on just this morning, on Monday morning, before we did our little podcast experiment here, which was that the lawsuits about the whole reduction in pay. If you'll remember, the governor wants to reduce state worker pay to save money. He had to sue the controller, John Chung, to try to get this to happen because Chung has told him, I'm not doing it. I can't do it because of our computers, and I'm not going to do it. Those lawsuits have not – there's no court date for those yet.
No.
In part because we're waiting to hear whether the court would consolidate the case of the governor suing the controller and the labor union that represents most state workers suing the governor. You know, since they're all kind of around the same fundamental issue, can you reduce state worker pay? What, 165, 170,000 state workers potentially, you know, having their pay reduced. So there's no court date for those, which also means any savings that would be realized is not going to happen in August. I mean, no one's saying that in the administration. I'm saying that. It's not going to happen in August. You're going to run out of time. No court's going to ask the controller, what, at best 2-3 days from the end of the month, do this.
Go back and do this retroactively on your computer system.
In which case, you're not going to save that money in August. So then you look into September. Now, the controller says we have enough money to go through September and even longer now, I think, with his new cash projections. Hmm. But you are, as the controller's folks said recently, at the end of August, you are going into that expensive borrowing plan that you've got to go get money off of Wall Street, which means several hundred million dollars in fees just for those really high-interest loans.
Right. Yeah, you know,
this is a lot of doom and gloom today, isn't it?
It's not an ideal scenario. Well, it could be worse. I mean, as we mentioned before, it wasn't just Democrats who voted against the budget. It wasn't just Republicans. There was a lone Democratic holdout.
But she didn't vote against the budget. Let's be clear. She just didn't vote.
She just didn't vote.
Right. And so when Anthony's referring to his phase two of this podcast, which is budget repercussions, take it away.
And Assemblywoman Nicole Parra, termed out Assemblywoman Nicole Parra, Democrat from Hanford, who has openly flirted with the idea of endorsing a Republican to succeed her.
Openly.
Openly.
Did she do it on a radio program or something down in the valley? Anyway, no, I digress.
I don't listen to the radio.
it's a dead medium. It's all podcasts these days.
But she did not vote for the budget last night, and today she is moving offices, and not by choice. The Assembly Speaker has kicked her out of the Capitol completely.
Yeah, I was going to say, not just like a smaller office in the Capitol.
Moving across the street to the Legislative Office Building, across N Street. Which, in my 10-plus years of covering this place, I don't remember that one happening.
I got an email from a worthy blog reader and maybe a podcast listener who's a staffer who said she thought it happened back in the 80s at Willie Brown, kick somebody out of the building and into the building where our studio is right now across the other side of the Capitol. I don't know. I'd have to go back and check that.
And there was the Gang of Five insurrection as well, in which five Democrats who tried to overthrow Willie Brown lost their offices. So.
Yeah. But they got their offices again inside the building, though, right? They didn't get kicked out of the building.
No. I think they weren't even relocated at all.
Well, and there you go.
Could be wrong.
But it's
Gary Condit, if you're listening, just let us know.
But it is the ultimate punishment of punishments in the whole office game about where your office is, getting kicked out of the building. And Parra's rationale a couple of weeks ago in speaking to her hometown newspaper was she couldn't vote for a budget without a water bond deal because we've been talking about a multi-billion dollar water bond to put on the November ballot that would, strengthen water security and safety and providability for ag and other people and all kinds of things with water, all things water, I'm just going to call it. But that in the absence of that, she couldn't vote for a budget. So that had been her rationale. She wasn't on the floor for most of the Sunday night debate. I mean, I actually thought she was absent and then was told later that she was back in the lounge, which was kind of...
hiding.
I'm going to let you figure that out.
Oh, wait, there were 45 votes, obviously Nel Soto.
Yeah, here's what happened. It was 45 to 30 for the budget. It needed 54 votes, so obviously it failed. The five votes that were missing were Nicole Parra, Democrat of Hanford.
There are 48 Democrats, right?
Yeah, but I'm getting there.
Oh, okay.
There were five members of the Assembly who did not vote. Nicole Parra from Hanford, Democrat. Nel Soto, Democrat of Pomona, who is
ill.
Not well. Sharon Runner, Republican of Lancaster, who is also not well for health reasons. Right. And the final vote was, Alberto Torrico, Democrat of Fremont, who was stuck in Miami and couldn't get a flight back because of hurricane conditions. He was there trying to visit his kids who'd been in Belize, but I digress. Right. Anyway, he couldn't get there. And the fifth vote, which we haven't talked about, is Greg Agazarian, Republican member from Stockton, who also, like Parra, laid off, as we call it, did not vote, was there, but did not vote yes or no. And Republicans are kind of grumbling about Agazarian's non-vote. But let's stick with Parra for a moment.
Okay.
But Parra wasn't even on the floor. You did not see her. You didn't see her at all. And I thought she was absent. But she just chose not to vote. And so, yes, today, and the only comment I think is it's an internal caucus matter, right?
Because
you don't get much comment from the Democrats. But Speaker Bass clearly is the person in charge of the caucus. And off Ms. Parra is packing her bags across the street.
Yeah. And you know, how this brings us closer to a budget resolution, I don't know. But that's...
Well, right, because, I mean, then you've got to assume you're not going to get her vote on a budget.
Unless you get a water bond. And maybe, hey, who knows? You know, maybe that's the price that Dave Cogdill and Mike Valines, both from the Central Valley, both from Fresno, both with strong ag interests in their districts, maybe that would be enough to get a deal done.
I just want to say in brief passing on the the Parra thing is a very much inside baseball, scandal. But, you like politics. You're listening to this podcast. We figured you'd be interested. But, I mean, you know, I can't help but notice, too, that Nicole Parra's district down in the Hanford area and the, into the Kern County area, it's a tough district for a Democrat.
Right.
And Democrats have spent a lot of money to keep her in that seat for the last 6 years.
And there's a very real chance they may lose that seat this time around.
And so you've got to imagine that not only is it an issue of party towing the party line, but they've invested a lot of time and money in Nicole Parra's seat, and they apparently don't like what her stance on things. So.
Well, and remember, Don Parada can say the same thing about Lou Correa, Democrat from Orange County, again, a Democrat in a Republican area who got locked out of his office earlier this year for a similar type of transgression.
And there's been a lot of discussion whether Correa would support a tax increase because he has said consistently he doesn't support tax increases.
Is it worth mentioning the Agazarian vote as well? Because he may be telegraphing, remember, in the Senate last year, when we were at a stalemate, Abel Maldonado did not vote for the budget, but he stayed off. And he later was a vote for the budget. Greg Agazarian is now running from his safe Republican assembly seat. Where he's termed out. Is running in a much more Democratic Senate seat against Lois Wolk, assemblywoman from Yolo County. And so maybe Agazarian is positioning himself as more of a moderate for the Senate race.
And probably, if nothing else, I mean, given that everybody knew what the outcome was tomorrow, maybe he and maybe Assemblywoman Parr also thought there's no harm. And there's no reason to do anything now because this isn't a real vote. It's not going to pass.
Right.
Of course, in Parr's case, she found out there was a harm, at least in terms of where she hangs her hat.
Literally.
On a daily basis.
Yes.
We have no resolution to the budget. You and I haven't figured it out in this podcast.
No.
I don't even know if I could place a bet anymore about when it'll be done.
But at least we have our office space.
Yes, we haven't lost our office space.
No.
Though, you know, with the funding of newspapers and broadcasting.
And you guys, NPR is raking it in, public
dollars. Oh, yeah, sure, sure.
Send your money.
Please, I need a job. Well, we'll keep watching the budget. You want to say anything else about the budget, what you're watching, anything? Make mention of any of it before I say goodnight,
no,
Gracie?
No, I think we'll hopefully have some better news for you next week.
I'm doubtful. I'm highly doubtful. But okay. We'll see. It'll get more interesting at least. So for Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.